For Montreal and for Canada, can you describe briefly the chronology of the events over the past few days as you've seen them?
A man named Freddie Gray, 25 years old, was taken into custody by the Baltimore City Police Department in West Baltimore. During the process of his arrest, which part of it was captured on video, it seemed to be a very brutal arrest. Freddie Gray was screaming in agony as he was being arrested. They took him into custody, and then 1 week later, Freddie Gray was dead after having had to go to the hospital for severe injuries, including a crushed voice box and a snapped spine. And in the community, people began to organize and to express great concern, obviously, for after the death of Freddie Gray. He was taken into custody one Sunday, and he was dead by the following Sunday. And Freddie Gray is not just anymore an individual who was killed by police, but Freddie Gray symbolizes all the sisters and all the brothers who've been victimized, brutalized, and yes, even killed by police officers.
As someone who's on the ground there and a community leader, a pastor, what things would you like to correct or add to the media's coverage?
Well, I think context is important. And so I'd love for the media to tell the whole story or tell more of the story and not just thrown bottles or burned out cop cars, but help share the context. And so, for instance, one in four black people in Baltimore live in what's called a food desert and have issues around access to healthy food. The high poverty rate in Baltimore has been a longstanding issue. We have gentrification that is yet unfolding in Baltimore, and entire black communities are being uprooted and displaced out of their neighborhoods. We have a Baltimore City public school system that is just now getting around to helping to provide first-class schools. And they have lead in the water of the Baltimore City public school system. And so our children can't even drink from the water fountains. They have to bring in water bottles or drink from coolers. So helping to provide that context is very important. At the same time, you have Baltimore being a place that is essentially the headquarters for many of the nonprofits and foundations in the nation. A lot of money is flowing through here. And so that's a part of the context as well, because with all of these nonprofits, with all these foundations, with all these grants, with all this money, the material conditions of black, brown, and poor people are not changing at a rate equal to how much money is coming in. And so Freddie Gray, as I said earlier, is not just an individual anymore. He symbolizes a people saying enough is enough. And so when you see thrown bottles or burned out cop cars on television, just know that it comes from somewhere. That right. People have gotten to the point where they're upset, to the point where they're in an open rebellion of this system.
There's a whole conversation, especially from the article in The Atlantic by Ta-Nehisi Coates, about nonviolence right now. As a man of faith and as a religious leader, this is something that I would be interested in hearing your opinion about.
Well, I was not able to read the entirety of that article, but I'm familiar with the debate around nonviolence. In fact, it's something that I'm regularly asked about. People regularly want me to endorse nonviolence. I would say to those people and to those who hold that view, I wish they would direct some of those questions to the mayor of Baltimore, to the police commissioner, to the president even. How is it that we only want to assure the public about nonviolence? How is it that we only want to get that assurance when it comes to black, brown, and poor people? Talk to the Secretary of State and ask him about nonviolence. Talk to the President of the United States. Ask him about nonviolence. Talk to corporations who send weapons all around the world. Ask them about nonviolence. In fact, their example and what they're doing on the ground sends a message that violence is the way.
Do you have any comments about detentions and these mass arrests that have happened, or any stories you'd like to relay to us in Canada?
Absolutely. It's interesting that the way they frame the protests here in Baltimore, they call it a riot. You know, and I believe that words are very political. Riot has a certain connotation to it. So what I'm saying, you know, with raising that is, I don't call this a riot. I call it an uprising or a rebellion. I call it an awakening, because that's exactly what's happening. This is not just blind, senseless actions that are happening in Baltimore. These are people who have a very acute analysis of the conditions on the ground and who are manifesting their frustration and despair, manifesting it in ways that they see fit. Now, you and I may agree with, may disagree with how they are expressing their pain, but I find it so interesting when people are more concerned about the expression of our pain than they are the conditions of our suffering. And so I just say to people, investigate the conditions of our suffering. And if you're going to call this a riot, or if you're going to look down your nose at what's happening in Baltimore, then I hope you would also look down your nose when hockey players get to fighting on the ice. I hope you look down your nose and look down on communities when they lose a hockey game or lose a basketball game. And even when they win sports games and they turn over cars and they trash the community, let's have a level playing field. If you're going to look down on black, brown, and poor people, look down on all communities. And I think you may find that you'll have a different view of what's going on in Baltimore right now, at least what's coming across the news.
I was listening to a little snippet of you in the streets, and you said something quite inspiring. You were saying you don't have to agree on everything to work together on something. Can you speak a little bit about what that means?
Right. The coalition that is forming is coming from all different kinds of quarters in Baltimore. And so yesterday I was with the Bloods and the Crips and the Black Guerrilla Family. Those are three street organizations, sometimes called gangs, that are here in Baltimore. And we were together along with imams, Muslim clerics, Jews, activists, Pan-Africanists, barbers, boxers, mothers, daughters, sisters. We were all together because in this moment we recognize that we have a common struggle and a common fight, even a common enemy. And so I was trying to underscore the importance of us seeing the bigger picture, recognizing that even in your own families, you don't agree on everything, but that doesn't stop you from being family. I disagree with my mother on some stuff. She disagrees with me on some stuff, but that's still my mama. And I would say to those who are doing this work that we can agree that while there are some philosophical or even practical things that we have a difference of opinion upon, we should agree that police brutality and police murder and state violence should not go unchallenged in this city.
Right. And can you describe the previous Mayor O'Malley, what his policy, what lasting effect that's led in terms of the relationship with the police?
In terms of the relationship with the police?
Yeah.
Well, I think I heard you say the name Martin O'Malley. Is that right?
That's correct.
All right. So he used to be the mayor of Baltimore. And while the mayor, he instituted the zero tolerance policy with the police department. And at the introduction of that policy, we saw hundreds of, if not thousands, but it was thousands of people who were arrested illegally and were released without charge. He brought in officers from New York City as well to help to institute that policy. And so his legacy of policing is still here. And now, two mayors later, some of the residue in the culture of policing yet remains. And so we are trying to not just address individual officers. And in fact, if that is the story for some news outlets, that's all wrong. We're not just talking about individual officers. We're talking about a system of policing that needs to be engaged here in Baltimore, and one in which the community controls policing. The community does not just have a say, but the community has the authority over the police officers, and right now it's the other way around.
What do you say to people who might lose faith?
Well, I would say that this is all, we always call this a marathon around here in Baltimore. We understand that this is not a 40-yard dash, and we are not the people who's going to get all the time quick resolution to our challenges. And so I would say, keep on keeping on. I would tell you about children yesterday that as we was marching them through the soldiers and trying to get them safely home, these students broke out in song yesterday and started singing a song called Every Praise is to Our God by a gospel artist named Hezekiah Walker. They started singing in the midst of the challenges, singing in the midst of the chaos and the despair. They still found a reason to sing. And so I would say to anybody else as well, to locate your reason to sing. Yes, it's going to get hard sometimes. The trouble is going to be insurmountable sometimes. But to keep on pressing, reaching, and pushing, because we're not just doing this for the now, but we're doing this for our grandbabies and our great-great-great-grandchildren that are coming behind us. And while it all may not be fixed right now, we're going to do something to make a difference in our lifetime.
For people in Montreal, in Quebec, in Canada, what could they do to help? What's your suggestion?
Well, one of the things you can do is to go to bemoreunited.org or follow us on Twitter at @bemore_united. @bemore_united. And you can follow me as well, Heber Brown, @Heber, H-E-B-E-R, last name Brown. And that's important because you're getting a lot of voices coming out of Baltimore right now. I want to make sure that your listeners are getting connected to people who are on the ground, who oftentimes will give you a perspective and a view from the streets of Baltimore, and that'll be different than what the corporate or mainstream media sometimes conveys. And so follow us online. Get the latest news from people who are here. Who better to tell you what's going on in Baltimore than Baltimoreans? And so get the information from those of us who are here and who have a strong track record of serving here. But also, financial resources would be a great help to support the work that we're doing. We're building alternative food systems in Baltimore. We're creating our own public safety teams in Baltimore. We've created makeshift health clinics in our churches and in small organization headquarters to make sure that those who are getting shot by rubber bullets and those who are being affected by pepper spray and tear gas can get the proper medical care that they need. We're bailing people out of jail. 100 people got bailed out of jail yesterday because of our coalition and our work, and there are about 100 more still in jail just for protesting their rights to stand up for justice. And so your support would go a long way in helping us to continue to do the grassroots work that we need to do on the ground here.
Thank you. We have just a few minutes left, and I wonder, is there anything I didn't ask that you had wanted to say?
Well, no, I would just encourage folks to see the bigger picture, that Baltimore, at least in the issue of police brutality, is not much different than Ferguson, which is not much different than Oakland and New York. And I would imagine that people, even in Montreal and Quebec and Toronto, and in Canada, have their own stories about being violated by systems that were supposed to protect them. Let's connect the dots together and build networks of organizers, networks of activists that help change things so that even if they don't emerge in our lifetime, let's make sure that our children, our children's children have a better day.